Our next guest is a member of the Sumer sports team. He's going to help us figure out the Brown side of things, how they perceive it, and talk about some of the various rankings out there and whatnot. He is Sam Bruckhouse. He's on the fan hotline, and he joins us right now. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas. How y'all doing?
Doing well. We're at this weird convex here where we're excited for football, but I'm also enjoying summer too much. I don't know if you have that same thing, but I'm ready for football, but I'm not ready for summer hijinks to end.
You know, fellas, I had a big June. I did some traveling, and my favorite day of the year is July the 4th. And what I'd like to do for July the 4th, I'm based out in New York. I go to the Coney Island hot dog eating contest. I watch those guys compete, and it just gets me juiced up for the season. I'm done with the summer hijinks. Give me some games, baby. I'm ready for some football.
A lot of people make that jump. 4th of July hot dog
eating. Year to the Coney hot dog eating contest?
Every year.
And that's your let's get going, let's get excited. I love you.
There's something about Joey Chestnut eating 70 hot dogs in front of you that just gets you ready for the grass being cut and some pads smacking against one another.
I'm not going to have to go back and watch it, see if it gets me ready here. Sam, what's your outlook on the Browns here as we try and figure that out ourselves?
So, look, I think the Browns draft shows what they think is going on with this team. Last year, they were a very successful defense. It kept them in many a game, despite the record not exactly showing it. They have one of the best players probably in the history of defense, if not in modern history, in Myles Garrett, who they locked up with a brand-new contract. And it's time to figure out that offensive side of the ball, starting at the quarterback position where they got – four people in the mix, two rookies, two veterans, and someone who's been in the system in Joe Flacco. I think that is what the entire focus of this offseason needs to be. Can we settle down our quarterback position, given that Kevin Stefanski, the two-time coach of the year, can typically figure it out from there?
So who do you think is the early edge with quarterback? Is it Joe Flacco, as you mentioned?
So it's kind of tough to view just given that, you know, Kenny Pickett is coming from a situation where he was a backup. I think as a result, you got to assume that he will continue playing at a backup level. We saw Joe Flacco a little bit last year, and we've seen him in a Browns uniform before. I think that he could take him to maybe 6 or 7 wins, perhaps, if we add a year or two onto that. But not much more than that, and the Browns are looking for a better season than that. And then you play the variants with Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, who I think, frankly, have a pretty similar outlook. Neither of these guys are going to be running around, running design runs too much. They're both very accurate passers. They both have shown an ability to throw the deep ball, but there's questions about taking sacks, in particular with Shedeur Sanders, and the ability to play physically at the next level in terms of Dylan Gabriel. I think those are kind of the wild card plays. If I had to rank them as an analyst in the offseason, I think it's probably the familiarity of Joe Flacco, the long tail distributions of Shedeur Sanders, the upside you could potentially get from him. Then you go to Kenny Pickett, who has been in this league, and finally Dylan Gabriel, who I think has an immense amount of potential. But if we're just going by what we thought was going to happen in the draft, at least, or the high-end potential, I think he has a little less high-end potential, but I do think he can be a good quarterback in this league.
The returns on the draft, or the perspective on the Browns draft, there's two sides, and there's very little in between on those two sides. So there's very few, there's no Switzerland, as it were. How do you think the Browns draft, or what were your thoughts on the Browns draft?
Yeah, I think the Browns draft was very similar to if you, you know, in the summer, you want an ice cream cone, you go into the ice cream place and they're like, you know what, it's 2-for-1 day, but you don't really need more than 2 scoops of ice cream. And it kind of feels a little weird, but it is good value. And that happened twice in the Browns draft. The first time is trading back for Mason Graham. I think people were very excited about Travis Hunter. I think the situation that the Browns are in made for a good landing spot for the Cleveland Browns. But I think this is the calculus that Andrew Berry and team, a very highly analytical unit, made. I think they looked at Travis Hunter, and they looked at the number 2 pick, and they looked at what the Jaguars and other teams were offering and figured that in order for them to reject a trade like the one that the Jaguars made, Travis Hunter needed to be an all-pro in his first 4 years at two positions. We've simply never seen a human being ever do that in the National Football League. And thus, I think the bet to go with a little bit more predictable position at the defensive line position, which we've seen over and over the best teams in the league like the Eagles invest in, was probably the right call there. But does it feel a little weird that you're getting, you know, more value in future years and giving up on what a lot of people thought was a generational prospect? Yes, it does. And it's the same way with having Shedeur Sanders fall all the way to the fifth, in which you're getting what the consensus was a top 25 to 50 player in the fifth round after you already drafted another quarterback. It's very similar to that 2-for-1 option. I think that happened twice. Is it great value analytically? Yes. Does it feel a little weird? Also, yes. So I think I like the Browns draft on paper, but I can understand how it's kind of a little confusing, particularly when you think that they picked a player at or two players at non-premium positions, Quinshon Judkins, who I know y'all talked a little bit about today, and Carson Schlessinger as well at the linebacker position in the middle rounds.
Have the Browns left themselves too bereft of talent, though, with wide receivers? Because it's Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, and a lot of question marks.
You know, I really liked how Jerry Jeudy came along, particularly when Jameis Winston was playing last year. He ended up being a player who was able to command a little bit of target share. And when we're looking at things that will move across quarterbacks changing or, you know, a scheme change in other situations, target share is one of those things that seems to be quite sticky, or it seems to travel year over year for wide receivers in excess of really any other positional statistic. You can find out more about that on SoomerSports.com or the Soomer Sports Show, where me and Lindsey Rhodes kind of really deep dived all of those statistics. But I think that Jerry Jeudy actually can be a quality receiver in this league, certainly a wide receiver one or two, while maybe not a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro. I think he can be a good outlet for whoever ends up being the quarterback. And I think Cedric Tillman probably slots in to that spot as well. Obviously, you'd love to have more pass catching talent, but when you're adding on the other side of the ball additional pass rushing talent, the margin of error gets a little bigger.
All right, Sam, we got Sam Bruckhaus here, Soomer Sports, on the fan hotline. If we ask you to compare these two quarterback situations, which one do you think is better, Browns or Steelers?
Man, that's it's an excellent question. I'd have to go with the Browns. I think if you look at the Steelers right now, we have Aaron Rodgers, who, frankly, like, I think you kind of got to put him at this point in the same boat as a Joe Flacco. I think Joe Flacco is probably, you know, in the backseat of that boat. But Aaron Rodgers just simply wasn't good last year. And I think the Steelers are a team who do not align with him and the things that he wants to do in terms of, you know, sit back in the shotgun, break down the defense pre-snap, and then try to deliver balls to his players. He wasn't able to do that despite having Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson last year. Now he has DK Metcalf, who saw, you know, a slight decline in his play when you look at the advanced metrics last year. And I just think that Arthur Smith wants to run the ball. So I think that the reliance on an aging Aaron Rodgers, a deep late-round pick, Will Howard, and a career backup, Mason Rudolph, is substantially riskier than a four-quarterback situation in which one of them is kind of a talent that fell, the other one is a talent who you kind of reached on but thinks has great potential, a young quarterback who has made it into, you know, 8, 9, 10 win seasons with the Steelers, and then someone who has been in your system and has won games before. I think I trust the Browns slightly more, but I can understand if Rodgers is just going to be QB1 and is able to retain a little bit of that sparkle, which we haven't seen for the better part of 3 years now. I can understand why people think it's the Steelers. I personally think it's the Browns.
Sam, if I were to tell you, we'll take Flacco out of the equation here, but out of the other three quarterbacks, if at the end of the season, I'm like, Sam, this guy got it done. He finished out the season. He came in, was awesome. Looks like the Browns have the quarterback of the future. Who do you think I'm talking about in that scenario?
I think that would have to be Shedeur Sanders. I think this is going to be considered a victory for the Browns front office if Shedeur Sanders, or Dylan Gabriel for that matter, plays excellent downs. But again, when we're just taking a step back out of all the hoopla and the last name, Shedeur Sanders was an accurate quarterback who took a team that was pretty god-awful into a team that was contending for the Big 12 and had basically two Heisman contenders in Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders himself. I think if I were having to put my life on the line for it, I think I'd go Shedeur Sanders first as the quarterback of the future, just given all of the data and information that is out there that never really changed throughout draft season, despite him falling to the fifth round.
All right. This is a little bit of network on network crime here. So we're not baiting you, but former Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield was voted/ranked as the 10th best quarterback in the NFL by ESPN's yearly poll. Do you believe Baker Mayfield is currently a top 10 quarterback in the NFL?
So look, I was in on Baker before even the first excellent Bucs year. And so I really do think he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. And I think that could be an aspect of his situation. You know, I was watching some Tom Brady film just to pass the time. Like I said, guys, I'm so ready for these games. I'm here breaking down 22 Tom Brady film. Y'all got to give me some new stuff. But I mean,
is that with Sofia Vergara?
Oh man, maybe I need to get into the culture, the pop culture and the tabloids to get me off of that. I've heard Sidney Sweeney some places. I mean, I don't know what this guy's doing, but he certainly was delivering the ball to Chris Godwin and Mike Evans years ago. Now you add Jalen McMillan, some other pieces for Baker Mayfield. He's just accurate. He makes good plays, and especially in those last two coordinators, Dave Canales and Liam Cohen, he was able to get everyone on the team involved. I think that's the name of the game for a quarterback. He was able to live up at least to his billing while he was at Oklahoma, if not necessarily the number one pick. I think he's pretty solidly a top 15 quarterback in this league, and I think if he has a good connection with our new offensive coordinator, he'll probably end up being in the top 7 to 10 range.
The list also had Burrow over Lamar. Do you agree with that?
I do not agree with that. Now, I do think Burrow was criminally underrated all last year, and I think a lot of the hesitation about his sacks has to do with the fact that he has two excellent wide receivers who he knows he can deliver the ball to late. And so this isn't anything to knock Burrow, but I don't know how you can look at a two-time MVP who has improved every single year, both in the passing and the running game, who can basically be your entire offense. And people want to say the Ravens are stacked. Last year, we didn't know about any of their wide receivers or their offensive line. Obviously, they added Derrick Henry. But when you're going into a season where everyone's like, well, the Ravens may have a down year, then they have a great year, it's probably not because any of those players ended up just being fantastically superior than what we thought the year prior. It's probably because the quarterback's really good. So I think Jackson is probably the second best quarterback as it stands right now, behind Josh Allen number one, Patrick Mahomes very close as a three. I think that's kind of the group, the tiers that I would draft currently 1, 2, 3.
Sam, it's the first time I can remember having you on as a guest. I think you killed it, man. Keep doing what you're doing. Really, really do appreciate your time today, buddy.
Thank y'all so much.
Sam Bruckhaus there, Sumer Sports on the Fan Hotline. Yeah, I knew of Sam, obviously. He is at Sumer Sports. We've had a few of his teammates on here all the time. But
yeah, I had Tage Seth on for a little bit. Yeah,
like there were multiple times in that we kind of looked at each other and just kind of smirked because he was just kind of killing. That was awesome.
No, loved it. Loved the y'all at the end, too, by the way. Because for living in New York, he's a Lake Charles, Louisiana guy.
And I was going to say, kind of broke my ankles. It's like I'm a football guy. I'm from Louisiana.
Loved it.
Also, I chose to live in New York. There was a lot there.
If we had more time, we'd go down the casinos over there at Lake Charles. I spent a couple days at those casinos. They're very, very nice, Nick. But they're just very seedy and exactly what you'd expect.
Exactly what you would expect.
Yeah, not like the highbrow casino. Not the one where you walk in and you're like, we're making a weekend of this. They're more like, we're doing some seedy things here.
I'm not going to say it, but there was one on the way to Toledo when we were driving up to Michigan. That I was like, they're going to take your house.
It's the type of place that you're like, hey, look, there's Uno in the corner, and now you can gamble on it.
Whoa. Leave Uno out of this.
Oh, now that Vegas is approved of Uno.
Say what you want about the WNBA.
Say
what you want about anything else. Uh-huh. You put some respect on the good name of Uno.
I'm just happy it made it to mainstream Vegas.
It doesn't sound like you're happy. That sounded like a very snarky response there.
Can't wait to gamble on some Uno.
Again, it sounds very, very sarcastic for where we're going. Anyway,
can we reverse card this like last 30 seconds?
Only if I can then hit you with a draw four after I drop another reverse on you.
See how this works? People are going to get in fights over Uno.
Yes, that's
they're
the whole.
They're going to get legitimate fights over Uno.
That's why Uno is so awesome.
People are going to get mad.
You know how many times.
I can't believe they're going to let people bet on Uno.
I have made people in my family rage quit because of Uno, because I will become Mr. Rulebook in that. It's like my one time we were up till 3 a.m. drinking, and I upset my cousin Michael, who was cheating, by the way. He didn't get the hand down quick enough. Mm-hmm. I called him on it. I called him on Uno.
Yeah.
And he rage quit. And I was like, I'm sorry. I can't let it slide.
And it's 3 a.m. The man just wanted a nap.
No.
He wanted to go to bed.
I think he wanted a freebie. And we don't allow those in a secret game of Uno involving blood.
This is a society.
I mean, like, we're blood, not that we, like, trade blood or anything. We're not like Billy Bob Thornton and Angelina Jolie back in the day.
Ooh.
None of you get that response. Anyways, the point is.
No, we all got it. That was the problem.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we haven't talked about it for 20 years.
That's the first thing I think about with either one of them.
Really?
How can you not?
Best friends. This is why it works here.
I mean, come on.
The Browns' biggest mistake keeps compounding in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.